Welcome to The Mob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Lob Podcast with These Football Times. My name is Stuart Horsfield and on this edition we are going to take a look at the FA Cup Final. Once the biggest day on the football calendar and now arguably an afterthought. What made it so great? What marked its gradual decline? Where does it go from here? Tonight we're going to talk about the peaks and the troughs of the oldest cup competition in the world. But really, it's an excuse for four grown men to reminisce about their childhood and what made the FA Cup final so special to them. Delighted to say that joining me tonight, three wonderful guests. First of all, a very hoarse but very overjoyed Mr. Stephen Scragg. Stephen, how are you?
Oh, top of the world at the minute, Stu, top of the world.
I know we're talking about the FA Cup final and it was the Champions League final, but just, if you can just explain a little bit about what last night was like.
For someone who's watched Liverpool do a great deal of things, that was still unique last night, you know, and it was absolutely nuts, you know, head exploding kind of territory. I'd said before the game, we could still do it, and that's just the Liverpool of the minute. You know, that concept of marrying likelihood with the insanity of overturning something as daft as a 3-0 deficit against Barcelona, you know, they can do it, and that's just what they are at the minute, a team that can do, you know, the incredible, and that was just the greatest night, basically, I've ever seen at Anfield.
Is that where you would rank it as the greatest night at Anfield that you've seen?
I was there for countless iconic Liverpool nights, and that really has been the best one of the lot. You know, Lionel Messi, Luis Suarez, you know, Philippe Coutinho, you know, all these players have come and you could just see them freeze in rabbit in the headlights, and for the likes of Suarez and Coutinho, who should have been able to tell their teammates what to expect and what they were going to be heading into. And still they were shocked by it. And it was just a beautiful, beautiful footballing evening.
Brilliant. Well, I suppose, ironically then, next guest, my United fan, Mr. Dan Williamson. Should we get your opinions on last night, Dan, before we start?
How is that agreeing not to talk about it?
Well, I never actually signed the contract. I figured it would.
I agreed nothing.
I figured it would just be interesting to get perspectives, because obviously, speaking for myself, there's not a chance in hell that I'll ever experience anything like that supporting Hull City, so I'm all right. But I am interested in a Man United fan perspective.
I actually texted one of my mates while the game was on, and I said, you know, you'd kill for that kind of energy that the team showed, you know, from the first minute till the last. You know, it would have been easy to go into the game and feel sorry for, you know, for them to feel sorry for themselves. But yeah, the energy was just unbelievable. And obviously that stems from the manager. One thing I will say, just to sort of pick up on a point Stephen made, I'm not sure it was necessarily a case of freezing in the headlights, because actually the week before the home leg in Barcelona, I actually thought Barcelona were poor then.
I'd agree with that. I walked away from that game watching that first leg and said that we were unlucky to lose 3-0, but lucky not to lose 6-0. And that was on the basis of how strong Barcelona came on in the last 15 minutes.
They were lucky
to reach the 75th minute of 3-0 up, but they were exceptional at the end, and they could have just run over the hills with it.
Yeah, I mean, from my recollection from last week was that, you know, Liverpool had, you know, were knocking on the door at 1-0, and then it kind of, Barcelona just took over. And I think that kind of, that 3-0 flattered them. And really, the poor performance, like, lethargic, slow, it just sort of continued into last night. But that doesn't take anything away from the comeback. It's pretty unbelievable.
Yeah, you're right. You know, it is unbelievable. And I think regardless of what team you support, deep down you have to acknowledge that what was witnessed last night was pretty spectacular and pretty special. If you just put your football hat on and not your allegiances or fans' allegiance hat on. My last guest then, Mr. Aidan Williams, a Newcastle United fan. Aidan, your thoughts on last night?
Well, like you, Stu, it's not something I'm likely to see for a considerable amount of time with my team, but it was simply astonishing, wasn't it? And well, the guys have covered it quite well, but I think the fourth goal in particular, just the sort of cheekiness of it, I guess, or the awareness, probably more likely, of Trent Alexander-Arnold just made it all the more special, I think, to show that Barcelona, for all that they've achieved in the past, they're not on it anymore, or not quite as on it at the moment, and switching off at that key time and allowing a goal of that kind to knock them out probably just made it all the sweeter for Liverpool, I think. And it was an astonishing performance and an astonishing result.
Just something we can dream of, isn't it, really, Aidan, to be fair?
Quite. Well, at least my team's actually been in that competition, so that's one thing I've got on you, but that's probably about it.
Okay, so Champions League aside then, obviously, you know, I figured we should mention it. And like I say, as Stephen was there last night, it was an opportunity not to be missed to hear from someone who was there. But obviously tonight, you know, we're here to talk about the FA Cup, the oldest domestic cup competition in the world, first played 1871-1872. I suppose I'll start with you then, Stephen, really. The early history of the FA Cup, very much the amateur sides dominated those early editions of the competition, very much middle class, if you like, winning sides from the old colleges, the old universities. However, it quickly became established, didn't it, once it was up and running?
Oh, yeah, very much a tournament or an event of privilege to start with. You know, you don't get Oxford University getting to a final, and it can't be some kind of highbrow, you know, activity. And those, I think the big standout thing about those early finals is just how few people attended them. The, you know, 2,000 for the first FA Cup final, you know, and it barely broke over 10,000 in the first, I don't know, about 10 years or so of the tournament. But it gained a snowball effect. You know, it started to pick up, and from the introduction of the Football League and professionalism, then it truly takes off, and it almost goes from being, you know, the property of the establishment, almost, you know, old Etonians, old Carthusians, you know, all of these, you know, upper class sounding names, to the working class areas of the Northwest and the Midlands and the Northeast, and it gains in popularity then. You know, a snowball effect is in place, and it's almost like a defined break off of the amateur to the professional era.
I mean, obviously, Blackburn Olympic, the first, I suppose, the first professional team, and by professional, we associate the working class. Yeah. And from there, the winners then become very much, you know, the teams that we know now, like you say, with the formation of the Football League as well. They sort of went hand in hand with these familiar names, and gradually that amateur idealism really just fell away in the competition.
I mean, you do have that wonderful anomaly of, like, Queen's Park, of the Scottish Leagues reaching back-to-back finals. You know, so that's kind of like the last quirkiness of the FA Cup in those early days, really. And then it's Football League teams as we know them, and then you get into that defined era of, you know, the peaks and the troughs of various teams, of eras, of like Blackburn winning those three cups in a row in the 1880s that always stood out. I mean, I grew up, I can't even remember, it was an uncle or something like that, that I got some SO coins, and they did a 1972 centenary of the FA Cup, and it was like an 8-page dossier almost with coins of every club who'd won the FA Cup up until that point. And they had every year on the back who'd won it, and things used to stand out on it, and like Blackburn Rovers winning three in a row, and, you know, it was like the rises of certain teams, and then they'd disappear. And And yeah, that always stuck in my mind, those specific eras that teams were stronger.
You're absolutely right. I mean, it's, you know, sometimes you can, you know, when a club looks back at its history, you know, and FA Cup winners, and that's great. I mean, Bury's there, Notts County's there. You know, that there are sort of teams that, especially Notts County, who've just been relegated out of the Football League. Yeah. But it's, you know, that they'll never win the trophy again. However, you can't take it away from them that they are FA Cup winners.
It's there. It's on the, you know, it's on their honours list. You know, how brilliant for a club like Bury to be able to turn around and say that, you know, they've won the FA Cup as, you know, more times than Leeds United. You know, for instance, you know, it's just a great anomaly. You know, and I think there's a quaintness to seeing those names, and so often against a team that, in contemporary terms, that you know of doing quite well, certainly within a colour television era. The fact that Bury, you know, dismantled Derby County 6-0 in a final there. And you know, if you say Derby County to anyone, the first thing that is likely to pop into the mind is, you know, if you're a student of the game at least, is Brian Clough and what they did in the 1970s. And, you know, it seems so detached to say that they were on the receiving end of the biggest FA Cup final hiding of all time.
It's, I mean, obviously the FA Cup trophy as we know it now, you know, is not the original. They get repaired anyway because of the way they're handled at post-match celebrations. But you know, it's not the original design. And you know, when we were going to talk about the FA Cup final, and you know, the original FA Cup was stolen. And to be fair, while I was reading about this, I didn't realise that the reason why they changed it was actually the FA release. They didn't own the pattern of it, and so it could be replicated by whoever, whenever, wherever. So when it was stolen and it was redesigned, so the FA could put a pattern on the design and it couldn't be replicated, which, you know, is not something I know. However, I do know that as time has gone on, they've had to replace it more and more, like we say, because of the over-exuberant post-match celebrations. One thing I do want to come to, and I'm going to ask Dan and Aidan their thoughts on this as well, and yours, Stephen. But 22-23, you know, the newly opened Wembley Stadium, which is where the final sort of went to once that stadium was opened, and slightly a little bit off track here. I'm just interested in people's opinions of a national stadium. Some countries have them, some countries don't have them. Obviously, when Wembley was up for not so much renewal, but rebuilding, and there was a whole discussion on do we need a national stadium, etc., etc. So I'm just interested, you know, before we move this on to a more modern day discussion on the FA Cup final, I'm just interested in people's perceptions of a national stadium, and you know, what do we think to it? Aidan, if I can come to you first, what are your thoughts on on a national stadium?
Well, it's the kind of thing that growing up you just kind of accept as normal without questioning it, don't you? Because it was always there. You know, that's always where England played. That's always where the cup final was. And that's just how it was. It was only, I guess, when they looked at redeveloping it that you kind of think, oh, hold on, this isn't quite what everyone else does. Is it really necessary? My sort of gut feeling on it is that, no, it's not. It's a big waste of money. or... if you had it, it shouldn't be where it is. It should be somewhere more central. Obviously, there's historical reasons for its location now. Whether that was quite why that was the decision back in 1922, I'm not sure. But it is a bit of an anomaly. If you look around all the other major nations, France is probably the only other one I can think of with a national stadium as such. Other countries seem to share it around a bit better. And like I say, if we did have one, being central would be preferable. If you think of some of the cup finals, especially since they shifted to later kickoffs for some of the more recent ones, how do you get home if you don't live in the south afterwards? It basically, yeah, a lot of people may stay over anyway, but it kind of makes that a necessity rather than an option.
Yeah.
The last thing to think about is the supporters, and probably supporters from anywhere north of London is even further down the list of what they might think of. But it's a bit of an anomaly in the current day, I think. Back then, it was quite iconic. It was, you know, state of the art, presumably back in the 1920s. So it was quite a a sort of statement, if you like. It was the Empire Stadium, wasn't it? It was a big statement of what we can achieve and what we can build and what we can do. The modern one, as much as it's an impressive stadium, it's a bit soulless and its location is more of a hindrance than anything.
Okay. Dan, your thoughts on the National Stadium debate?
Probably similar to Aidan. I think when I was younger, I always thought, you know, playing at Wembley must be the ultimate dream, and I think most young kids probably would have put Wembley even ahead of their own kind of club stadium as, you know, the place to play. You know, it kind of felt like it was reserved for the cream of the crop. Whereas nowadays, without going into it too much, it seems that any Tom, Dick and Harry can make an appearance there. So I had great sort of feelings for the old place. But then I agree with Aidan in that when it came that time to tear it down, probably should have thought about going a different route, either not having one and taking, you know, cup finals, etc., on a bit of a road show, or building it somewhere other than London so it can actually feel like a national stadium rather than what it feels to me is like a stadium for Southerners, basically.
Yeah, this is a very northern panel. I am fully aware of that, but that's okay. I'm okay with that. Stephen, obviously, you know, you've heard what the guys have said. You know, any sort of last thoughts on the National Stadium debate?
Yeah, I agree with everything that Aidan and Dan have said there. You know, Wembley, the old Wembley Stadium was something that was, you know, quite awe-inspiring when you were watching it as a child on television. You know, I can always remember kind of like the shadow of the roof resting on the pitch as the sun came round it and things like that. You know, the fact that you're playing beneath, they always used to use that phrase, beneath the Twin Towers. And it was that long walk from the tunnel as well, from one end of the pitch all the way. And, you know, there must have been, you know, many a cup final lost within that walk alone, you know, to get up there and then stand there for the national anthem and stuff like that. You know, some players must have been psyched out of cup final performances there and then without a ball being kicked. And it did, it had an aura to it. But then the reality of actually going to it was a different matter, you know, seeing it. Seeing it for real was a culture shock compared to this aura and cartoon legend almost that you had of the place, and the same as the others have said, you know, it's to knock it down and then rebuild it there, you know, they could have done so much better, you know, it's a stadium that you feel could have been, I don't know, put together in a drawing contest for 12-year-olds. You know, it's a soulless, unattractive, unappealing stadium in a often difficult to get to part of London. And yeah, I lament it because I enjoyed the Cardiff final so much as well. And the fact that you have the semi-finals at Wembley, it just takes the aura. You know, it's never had an aura to start with the new Wembley. So basically, I just I can add a few extra bones and just agree with everyone else.
All right. So conclusive decision there by all of us. I think that probably as a child looking back, Wembley was the place to play. Now we're a little bit older and a little bit wiser. Do we really need it? Probably not. And like you said, you know, the new Wembley is a sort. I've been to both stadiums. And the new one is a soulless place. And like Stephen said, when you went to the old Wembley, you almost wish you hadn't gone, and you just viewed it through a television screen rather than through your own eyes, because it's devastating.
Yeah, because it was it was awful place, really.
it truly was. So, I mean, obviously we're slightly different ages, you know, tonight, not too much, but certainly. For myself, growing up as a child of the sort of late 70s, early 80s, you know, the FA Cup final was, you know, it was the game. It was almost bigger than, for me as a child, you know, it was almost bigger than winning the league. You know, if you could win the cup final, win the cup, that was what people used to talk about. And, you know, it was almost like it was the biggest moment, you know, within a player's career. And I think, you know, we've talked on here, all of us, you know, tonight at various points about our first World Cups and, you know, the first time we went to a game. But I suppose in terms of FA Cup finals, Dan, you know, you're not necessarily, I don't want your favourite FA Cup final memory, because we'll look at that later. But what's your earliest FA Cup final memory, or the earliest one that you would class as your very first FA Cup final?
Well, luckily, the perfect sort of time to start the memories are 1990. So that's the first final that I really remember, and it's not crystal clear, you know. But I do have several vague memories about this, and I was talking to my mum about this the other day, so asking her to try and fill in some blanks for me. But I remember it being a really really hot day on the final, not the replay, the first game. I remember going to my grandma's in the morning for some reason, and coming home with my dad with a, you know, she'd given us a lasagna, I believe, and just watching it at home. And it was the same summer as Italia 90, and it's just sort of, I have vague memories of that as well, and it's kind of just about the time where I was seven then, so it's kind of, you know, just about the time where you're kind of understanding what's going on and getting into it, really. So 1990 was the first one, and then it was quite a memorable 3-3 game, the first game against Palace, and then there was a replay on, I think it was a Thursday night, the following Thursday night was the norm then, and it was a 1-0 win thanks to a rare goal from Lee Martin. So it was quite an important game, as we all know, as it kick-started the Ferg era, really. It was the first trophy after he'd been appointed, you know, just shy of 4 years earlier, and it really kind of really kicked off the decade of the 90s. So perfect time for a young lad to sort of come of age as a Man United fan, and what wasn't a bad decade, really.
Yeah, it's funny, just thinking back then, Stephen will be able to back me up on this, but I think the two semi-finals, I think it was 4-3 Palace-Liverpool, and then was it 3-3 Manchester United-Oldham, and the same day on a Sunday, played at neutral grounds, not Wembley, you know, and for me they were probably the last two great, I suppose you can look at the Man United-Arsenal, the Man United-Arsenal in the treble season, but those two FA Cup semi-finals... leading up to that 1990 final were just two unbelievable, unbelievable games.
They were massive. They were huge, huge games. You know, the fact that they were back to back, they were on the BBC show, both of them. So they were,
that's right.
You know, they were there for millions to watch. We weren't talking about 2 or 3 million people being able to watch these. We're talking about 18, 20 million people being able to watch these two games. It was quite unprecedented at the time. It was a blisteringly hot day. I was at Villa Park for our semi-final, where our defence just capitulated. It was a strange, strange game where Dalglish seemed to select about six defenders, but two of them playing in midfield. It was an absolute. I think we came to within 2 minutes of winning that, and then they pushed it into extra time, and that was where we just fell apart completely then. And then I remember the Man United Oldham game being on the radio on the way back, and it, again, just going from, you know, one way and the other, and people had just presumed it was going to be automatically going to be a Liverpool Man United final. It was one of those. It was just utterly presumed in the build-up to it, and it could so easily have been Oldham Crystal Palace. It could have been any of those permutations, really.
Absolutely.
Both of those games were epically close, and I remember the replay between Man United and Crystal Palace being massively disappointed by it, because Palace had been so free-flowing in the final shouldn't have been an unexpected way considering what they'd done in the semi-final, but they really went for it. But then in the replay, they were a lot more physical. They took a physical approach, and they played the player rather than the ball. And it was just a let down as a spectacle compared to what they'd done on the Saturday afternoon.
I've got to say, Dan, before I ask Aidan about his first memory, I'm quite envious that you can ask your mum to fill in gaps of FA Cup finals. My mum just used to do the gardening on FA Cup final day and leave me in the house by myself to watch it. She hates football. She wouldn't have a clue about any FA Cup finals, so fair play. Aidan, your first, if you like, your first FA Cup final?
Yeah, I remember the 1991 very well, and that was an epic Sunday of the semi-finals as well, but that was certainly far from my earliest memory. I've got vague recollections of the 1982 final between Tottenham and QPR, but it's very vague recollections.
They were dire finals.
I really recall is, I can remember QPR's maroon change kit. That's one thing that's really stuck in my mind, but I have no idea if that was the first match or the replay. But what I really remember better is the following years. So this is what I would class as my first real final. The 1983 was Manchester United and Brighton.
Yeah.
So this was it was another dramatic one that went to a replay, just like the one Dan was talking about there. First match was really Brighton's big chance, wasn't it? I really had the opportunity to steal it. But the whole day is still really clear in my mind. This was back in the days where we had hours and hours of build-up on the television, even through the sort of Saturday morning kids' programmes that you had prior to the real FA Cup programme starting later. You had various FA Cup-themed things there, which fun and games and so on, which was all very appealing to a young boy. Yeah. Then when the actual coverage begins, you had several hours of build-up, and I remember just sitting through the whole thing, being so excited and captivated by, you know, reporters going to the team hotels or sitting on the team bus as they're coming in, or in Brighton's case, they were on a helicopter, and I remember that really, really well. They flew to Wembley by helicopter, because I think they were sponsored by British Caledonian Airways, I think, probably where that came in. But it just made it all seem so utterly captivating and dramatic that you were in there with the players and these things, and they always had one of the team talking through all their teammates and explaining all the nicknames and who was best at this and who was the worst at the other and so on. It all seemed endlessly fun. And, of course, this was the only game you ever got to see, really. So it was just magnificently exciting. Brighton, of course, they just managed to get relegated as well. So it was very much the underdogs against the high-flying team. Man United were one of the top. Were they third, I think, that season? Something in that area. And they looked to have won it, of course, only for Brighton to come back. But and then Brighton should, of course, have won it at the end just to make it so, so dramatic. But of course, when it went to a replay, it was only ever going to be one result, sadly.
It's funny you mention that. You know, looking back now, you know, we have HD television and 4K and QE, whatever it is, you know, and all these fantastic camera angles, and yet, like you say, Aidan, brilliantly, cameras went on the team bus and travelled in with the players. I mean, it would never happen now. Can you imagine, you know, a reporter being allowed on the team bus and, you know, and travelling in with them? It was almost an innocence, although it was 70s, 80s, you know, which don't seem innocent times when you look back at what's happening. But in terms of football, they were almost sort of the last days of the innocence of the game, really, before the big money started to get involved. Stephen, your first memory?
Well, similar to Aidan there. No, I have a vague recollection of the 1980 final when it was Arsenal-West Ham. I can remember kind of like the colours of the kits, like the yellow against the white, seeming a bit strange, and I can remember just going out playing with my mates. But then, like, 1981 was the first one I watched. It absolutely tipped it down. So, like, going out playing with your mates wasn't really an option. You know, it was a proper rainy day, and you were captive of the house. And then, so I remember sat there watching it, and like they said, all of the build-up, and back then as well, it was on the BBC and ITV, so you could take your pick, and if there was something that you weren't particularly interested in, what was on one channel, you'd switch over and watch on the other, see what they were doing. And it was that whole sense of occasion that would grip you, because it was one of those very, very limited amount of live games that were shown on television at the time. So there was just this huge sense of occasion, like you said, with kind of like the cameras and stuff like that, being on the coaches, you know, getting player profiles and in the build-up. I can always remember them. Also, I think it was the BBC used to do it, and it was like a request slot where they would dick out, they would find footage of old finals. So people would bring, there'd be phone votes, say, you know, if you want to watch the goals of the 1958 final or whatever it was. And this is where you kind of like, you learn stuff. So you'd be sat there watching these black and white footage of like the Matthews final, for instance, and you would. It was just such a sense of occasion is what always struck me.
I can establish now that I am the oldest member of this panel. For me, the first game that I can remember fully is 78. So Ipswich Arsenal. My great granddad was a massive Ipswich Town fan, and I can remember he went to the game and brought me back a rosette, and the score's written on the back, and I've still got it. It was when Ipswich won 1-0. And I can remember Ipswich hit the woodwork. It felt like a million times when you're a kid, because you always exaggerate. But I think Ipswich hit the woodwork three or four times in the game and then finally won. And it's funny, because like you say, Stephen, as soon as the FA Cup final finished, you were out. You were in the garden being whoever had been the hero of that cup final. Yeah, I can remember being I could be Alan Sunderland. Yeah. I'd been Roger Osborne. I'd been Ricky Veer. You name it, I've been them. And that's what the cup final did. It engendered this almost hero worship for a weekend, and then you'd go back to who your favourite was before then.
Yeah, it was just the random generator of it as well. There was not always a rhyme or reason to who would reach an FA Cup final. You know, West Ham in 1980 did so from the second division and won it, and they weren't the only team within that span of time to do that. You know, Sunderland had done it, Southampton had done it from the second division. So it wasn't always a guarantee that the best teams got to the FA Cup final. You know, there was that fabled look of the draw and it's your year, because, you know, the ball might roll your way in a game, and you know, there'll be a near miss somewhere. There might be a game that went to four replays or whatever it was. You know, that classic phrase of the name is written on the cup. And, you know, the FA Cup just seemed to be so attainable for so many teams. And it was great to watch. You know, there was almost like from a Liverpool supporting perspective, there was nothing more panic-stricken than reaching an FA Cup final, because you would fear losing it. The fear of defeat in an FA Cup final. I mean, like the Liverpool-Everton finals, especially 86, was gut-wrenching, because, you know, to reach an FA Cup final and lose it to your neighbours would have been intolerable. And I can remember the sense of panic throughout that 1986 Cup final. And it was almost a relief sometimes on the back of that to go out in the next year at the third round stage. So you could sigh a relief and say, you know, I can enjoy the Cup final this year because I've no vested panic in it.
Vested panic. What a great new phrase. So obviously we've chatted about our first cup finals, and I suppose this one's probably going to be a little bit more diverse now, depending on one, if you're lucky enough to support a successful FA Cup team, not myself, and how many you've actually witnessed sort of live on television. So you know, if we come to our favourite FA Cup finals, Dan. You know, as a Manchester United fan, I'm sure there's plenty for you to choose from as a Manchester United fan, you know, or as a neutral. But for you, which is your favourite FA Cup final?
Yeah, I think, like you say, spoilt for choice, really, in the 90s. I won't mention 99 just to give Aidan a bit of a break.
Thank you.
It's all right. But, yeah, I think I'd probably say 94 because, as I said, 90 was the first one that I kind of have vague memories of, but 94 was the first sort of one that I really remember pretty much everything about. So I'd probably say that was my favourite. I remember, you know, most of the stuff about the cup run. There was a great game against Wimbledon. I think it was round five, 3-0 win at Salehurst Park, playing in their green and, you know, the green and gold kit. Which was absolutely one of my favourite kits as a kid. So that was that game, 3-0. Cantona scored a volley. I remember Irwin sort of pumped the ball into the box. Wimbledon headed it clear, and then Cantona just sort of teed himself up and volleyed it over. Would it have been Hans Sagers in net? A great goal. And then Irwin scored a great goal himself, finished off a nice team move, took on a few players and slotted it in the net, and, you know, a bit out of character for him, but that game just showed what a great unsung player he was. And then there was the semi-final as well. That was another sort of classic semi-final. Hughes scored a goal in the 119th minute. I remember exactly where I was watching it, who I was watching it with, and it was 119th minute. Hughes scored a volley to rescue the game, and then it went to a replay, which was at Main Road, I think. You had the final. The 94 final, it was another one of those rain-soaked days at Wembley. 4-0 win against Chelsea. Cantona scored two pens. You know, I was just in awe of him at that time. You know, I was 11 years old, and he's just there with his collar up, and he's taking a penalty in the FA Cup final, and it just appears like it's just another day at the office for him, you know. cool as you like, and then Hughes and McClair scored to make it 4-0. So that was a great memory. Couple of the penalties, you know, the two penalties, could probably argue one of them was a bit questionable, and I know Chelsea were complaining about it, but can't really argue with the score. And, you know, many people will say that 94 team was Fergie's best, you know, or one of his best. It just had everything. It had pace, power, you know, they could fight, they could play. It was just a brilliant team. So I would probably say that was my favourite cup final. That year was a good year as well. It was a double year, and it was only losing the FA Cup final again at Wembley to Aston Villa that prevented a domestic treble.
It must be great to support a really good team. Aiden, sorry, there was no, I didn't mean to lick it like that. Aiden, your favourite FA Cup final as a Newcastle United fan?
Yes, well, we can wallow in our misery.
We can. I'll be there with you in a minute. These. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really pick one involving my own team because in my living memory, there have been two and they were both thoroughly underwhelming, 98 and 99. We're rather unfortunate to have to play a team going for the double on both occasions and didn't really turn up either, which didn't help. And I'm far too young, obviously, for Newcastle's golden era in the 50s, winning 3 in 5 years. Speaking of the 50s, people talk a lot about the Matthews final as being one of the greatest, but really, we all know what was more important was what just happened before and just after it, the Newcastle win. But let's move on from that. My real favourite is one from when I was young, which I would choose the 1987 final between Tottenham and Coventry. Now, I've got no vested interest in either team at all, but this was a time, as we've already mentioned, where the cup final was really, really magical. It was a special thing. It was the whole game. I was 12 going on 13 at the time of this one, so I was able to absorb absolutely everything about it. It was a classic tale of a big team against an underdog. It was a big occasion. It was a team going for repeating final wins. Tottenham to this point had never lost an FA Cup final, whereas Coventry were in their very first, going for their first bit of silverware. It came in a decade of some really great finals. We've mentioned a few of them already, but there was the likes of the, dramatic anyway, Man United Everton the year before with a red card and an extra time winner, and then there was the Merseyside finals in the year before and after, the Wimbledon final and so on. And this was all in an era where there were so many really iconic, great finals, but this one I kind of think had more than all of the others, for me as a neutral anyway. It had a very early goal, Clive Allen scoring in the second minute. It had some terrific play from Coventry, particularly Dave Bennett. I remember him on the wing, and I was absolutely stunned why this guy wasn't an England regular, because he seemed to be going past everybody at will. It was great, tricky wing play and some excellent crosses, and he got the equaliser himself, but he also set up what is probably the most iconic goal from this final, which is Coventry's second equaliser, which was from Keith Houchen, the diving header. And he's kind of talked about it later, and that it was just instinctive. The only way he could possibly reach the ball was to fling himself forwards. But as it happened, it was an absolutely magnificent header and a stunning goal. And that it ended up as the goal of the season that year. But that's one of the most iconic memories from that game. And you talk earlier about recreating and being certain players in the back garden afterwards, and Keith Houchen is a very unlikely character to have picked to end up trying to emulate. I mean, nobody probably ever has on any other day other than that one day in 1987 where millions of English kids were pretending to be Keith Houchen and flinging themselves all over the grass trying to head the ball and failing largely. that was such a dramatic goal to bring Coventry back into it. And then we end up in extra time, and the game's decided with an own goal from a Tottenham stalwart in Gary Mabbott, although it was rather unfortunate, looping deflection over Clements. But it kind of added to the extra drama that the underdogs had won it, not through a piece of brilliance or a wonderful piece of skill, but through the primary defender of the much more vaunted bigger club ending up registering an own goal to win it for Coventry. And yeah, I just remember the other weird thing about it was Coventry having dual managers. They had two joint managers, which was a very strange thing. But I remember them sort of lapping the pitch at the end, arm in arm, with all the sky blue balloons tumbling all over the place. And it just seemed so absolutely terrific, so magical. And such a great game, made that really a memorable final that still stands out in my mind very vividly.
Brilliant. Very, very eloquently put. That, to be fair, that was going to be my second choice. Before I come to mind, Stephen, there's no way you're going to pick the one I picked with the amount of finals that Liverpool have been in. Your favourite final?
Well, that's it. It always depends. Are you wearing your own scarf or are you wearing your football fan in general's hat? Aidan was actually picked one of the ones that I'd have picked.
Yeah, I'd have picked from a pure
footballing perspective. That was an outstanding final. It had absolutely everything in it, from that early goal to a quick response to, Spurs nipping ahead again, Houchin's header, and then the own goal flicking over Clements for the winner. It had the lot, was captivated by that game. And it was one of those double-sided things as well, that the Spurs had played so well all season. And that 49-goal campaign for Clive Allen, they'd thrown away a League Cup semi-final against Arsenal, and there they were at the end of it, by right, should be picking up the FA Cup. So within it all, and that wonderful story of Coventry winning it, you still felt... that's a degree of sympathy to Spurs as well for losing her. But yeah, from a Liverpool perspective, it would have been the final 12 months earlier, coming back against Everton, and the relief of beating Everton and not losing to them. Rush coming on strong and Johnston scoring, Lineker getting that opener, and just the general panic and pandemonium of it all. The fact that all your mates are red and blue as well. So I can always remember the windows being decked out in the various colours. You'd walk down the street and half of them were red and white, half of them were blue and white. One or two of them had both because they were split allegiances in the families. And it just massively caught the imagination. And there was a huge build-up to that as well. I mean, that was one of the great things about the cup final. It wasn't just cup final day. You would have a cup final week. And the league campaign would very much more or less be over. You would sometimes have a game or so afterwards, but as far as the title race was concerned, it tended to be all said and done. And then the cup final became this big focus at the end of it. But it was a cup final week. There'd be stories every day in the build-up to it. There would be team news. There would be the obligatory injury scare. Because I remember like 88, for instance, when Liverpool were playing Wimbledon and we had a league game on the Tuesday against Luton or something like that, where Gary Gillespie and Nigel Spatman collided heads, split open, blood everywhere, and there was huge question marks over whether they'd play or not. So you would get this subterfusion and interest, and then there'd be always on the local news, there'd be the story of how your team was setting off for that plush hotel in Lillishall or somewhere in the home counties, where they'd hold up for 3 days and do training secretively behind closed doors and stuff like that. And it was there would be this general build up to final day. And 86 was the pinnacle for that, because it was just such a neighbourhood spat as well. And from a Liverpool sporting perspective, 86 from a football, just a football supporter in general, football fan in general, 87, but 81 replay as well.
You picked it. No. Go on, carry on.
I can't. But even kind of like the initial game was quite a poor game on a grey, drizzly day, and it didn't really live up to expectations. So much was made of Ricky Villa, and he underperformed. He was walking round the side of the pitch when I think the equaliser went in, and he was heading back to the dressing rooms. He'd been substituted. And I remember like Tommy Hutchinson's diving header to open the scoring, and then the equaliser off his head from the free kick that was going wide by the look of it, and he flipped it into the opposite corner. And there was only about 8 minutes to go as well. City were so close to winning that game, and then in the replay just went ballistic. It was just such a jaw-dropping game. It went one way and the other. I mean, everyone remembers Ricky Villa's winner, but. The one that caught my imagination was Steve McKenzie's volley the into the top corner. And again, another game that Dave Bennett played in, who Aidan mentioned with regards to the Coventry final. Dave Bennett was in that Manchester City side as well in 80-81. And he was this tricky, mercurial, skillful winger who could cut inside as well. Sometimes he'd play up front. And it was just a brilliant, brilliant final, dramatic. And there was always something special as well about those FA Cup final replays. As Dan mentioned, always played on the Thursday night for some reason. You know, why the Thursday? I mean, but within that, it made it so different as well. And, you know, the floodlights coming on at half-time and the sun dipping down and that the game would end up in, it would finish, it'd be dark at the end of it. And it just owed a different kind of feel to it. It was still the FA Cup final, but it still made it feel that little bit unique that you had to have a second game, but it offered these different aesthetic pleasures. So, yeah, from a Liverpool perspective, 86, from a football lover's perspective, 81 and 87.
Absolutely. The 81 replay is by far my favourite FA Cup final, like you say.
We spoke about kind of like Marco Tardelli's goal in the 82 World Cup final and how it became a cliche. It became shown so often in montage reels, in the opening credits to the next World Cup along. Every time Italy were, you know, shown in some kind of light on television, it was always Marco Tardelli and such a brilliant moment. But then it became that overplayed that it almost became a cliche. And Ricky Villa's goal in the 81 Cup final replay suffered that same fate almost. But the detachment to time, you know, you just have to look at it and just say how brilliant that game was and add everything.
Yeah. I mean, as a neutral, you want, I think, first of all, both teams to score in a cup final makes a great cup final to begin with. And, you know, if the lead can change hands, you know, like it did, you know, Tottenham went 1-0 up, Man City went 2-1 up, you know, and then Tottenham go on to win 3-2. And they're the ingredients for me that make a great FA Cup final. You know, if you can encapsulate all of that into 90 minutes, 120 minutes, you know, the agony and the ecstasy, if you like, you know, of a cup final when you're winning and you're so close to winning it. And then, you know, like Aidan talked about, Brighton came so close to beating Manchester United in that 83 Cup final. And it's almost like, you know, with the league, it plays out over 38, 42 games, depending on, you know, when you look at it. But in an FA Cup final, it's almost, a whole season's almost in a microcosm of 90 minutes, and the heartache and the joy that goes within it. You know, we've talked about the magic of the cup, if you like. You know, we've talked, you know, we've reminisced about all our favourite bits in the first ones and stuff. It's clearly not the same, or certainly not for us. It's not, you know, it's not the same as it once was. Dan, you know, the importance of the FA Cup, or that, you know, people talk about the magic of the cup's not there anymore. But for you, when did it start to lose, or has it started to lose a bit of its luster for you?
Yeah, massively. I was just thinking before I came on, I've got no idea who's in this year's final or when it is. It's completely off my radar at the moment. I kind of lost interest, quite a lot of interest in United anyway in 2005, which is another story. I think I've just lost interest, and I think what's killed it really. Obviously, there was the incident in 2000 when the whole thing about United not putting a team in the FA Cup, which was I always thought it was a bizarre decision, because why can't you just put a second string out, which is the norm nowadays, and stay in the FA Cup? But I also think it's really simplistic to say that is what's killed the FA Cup, because the FA have kind of killed it themselves as well since then. You know, changing kickoff times, playing semi-finals at Wembley, etc. You know, the list could go on. But for me, it's lost everything. I really enjoyed going to Cardiff, and I've not been to the new Wembley, but from what I see on TV, it looks horrendous. It looks really soulless. Just there's nothing appealing about it aesthetically, the FA Cup just doesn't really hold any interest to me anymore. I think another one of the things that has played a part in killing the FA Cup is the rise of the Champions League. and obviously the rise of the Premier League and the finances involved in both those cups. You know, you ask any fan, any manager, any player what they want to win, and it's the Champions League or the Premier League. So they're the kind of my main thoughts really on the FA Cup. Yeah, it's just not even some. I watch it if I'm at home and I've got nothing else to do, but I won't sort of put a date in the diary like I would have done when I was younger.
Is it? Can I just ask you, Dan? People talk about top four now, and you know, and players. You know, the season always seems about finishing the top four. Do you think now the finishing the top four has become more important than winning the FA Cup for certain teams?
100%. I think for every team, and I find it really, really depressing. And I feel like the top four, you know, you can put it in sort of air quotes, or you know, it's almost needs its own trademark, doesn't it? It's really depressing. And I think the race to sort of finish in the top four, as opposed to trying to win a trophy, is just a sad indictment of modern football, really. I think, because you know, what are you going to remember in 30 years' time? Or, you know, what are you going to tell the grandkids about? Are you going to tell them about the day that you won the cup? And, you know, if you were lucky enough to go down to the cup final and enjoy the day with your friends and have a few beers and really enjoy the day, or the day, are you going to, you know, remember the day that you scraped into fourth place and then probably got knocked out in the group stage of the Champions League anyway? Yeah, it really depresses me. And, you know, you see teams do it as well. They'll qualify for the Europa League and then they'll sort of do the best to get knocked out as early as possible. And I just think, what's the point? You know, why are you trying to qualify for these competitions and then get knocked out? And yeah, go for it. If you're in a cup, you should go for it. And kind of contradicting myself, because I said I don't really care about the FA Cup, but if I was a manager, you know, FA Cup and the league and all trophies would be a priority. You know, I would never try and go for fourth ahead of, say, fifth, and then chuck out the chance of winning a cup, because just finishing in those positions just don't hold any sort of weight, do they, years down the line? It's just it's quite sad, really.
Yeah, good, great answer. Well, from my point of view, great answer. Absolutely agree with everything you've said. Aidan, for you, the FA Cup, has it, you know, lost a bit of it? Like I said, lost a bit of its lustre, a bit of its magic. And you know, when for you did that sort of start to happen?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly has. But now, address the sort of origin, it's declined back a bit further into the early to mid-90s, really. I think we mentioned it briefly earlier about the semi-finals moving to Wembley, and that was in 1991, the first time that happened. And admittedly, that was a bit of a one-off then for two local derbies, and they wanted to get as many people in as possible. North London derby and a Sheffield derby it was then. But that kind of set the precedent, which became the more of the norm later on in the late 90s, and then carried on in Cardiff and the new Wembley of the semi-finals going there. That detracted from the final itself in terms of sort of special occasion, that the whole chance of getting to go to Wembley, and that earlier on about, you know, everyone seems to be able to get to Wembley much easier. Sorry, not the fans, the teams can get to Wembley much easier now, because there's so many more games there, and the semi-finals being there, it's less of an achievement, obviously, just to get to Wembley for the semi-final, and that was the start of it. But then through the 90s, of course, as the Premier League gained more importance with the television coverage and then more money coming in, this is where the malaise has begun. And it kind of hit home for me when I was watching, it was probably around the turn of the century, where a Newcastle game against Villa in the third round or something like that, and the stadium was half empty. And for me, when I switched the telly on, I was quite excited, thinking, oh, here we go, chance to get through for the next round, knock out a team who were quite decent but were playing at home, so we've got a good chance. The stadium was half empty, and I kind of thought, oh, nobody really cares anymore. Is it just me that cares? And it turns out you look around all the other grounds and no, there's loads of other people who didn't care. It seemed to be the norm, and as Dan was saying, qualifying for the Champions League or for teams of Newcastle's level and others, mid-Premier League or lower Premier League, merely surviving in the Premier League is far more important than trying to win a cup. So the game has switched from being about glory to merely being serving the club's financial interests of maintaining their sort of marketing presence and all that. And that's not, as you say, that's not the kind of thing you tell your grandkids about in the future. There's nothing wonderful about merely surviving for one more year in the Premier League. if you ask Wigan fans now, would they exchange their cup final victory over Man City 5 or 6 years ago with surviving one more year to struggle in the Premier League? Because obviously they went down a few days after the cup final, which is another thing. Why was the cup final before the end of the league? But there we go. They wouldn't exchange that at all. That memory is there. And so what? They've got relegated a couple of times since, and they're now trying to work their way back up. But, you know, they've won the cup final. That will never get taken away.
Brilliant. Yeah, fully agree. Stephen, Stephen, with regards to, I think we're all pretty much of the opinion of what's you know, where the FA Cup has started to lose some of its magic, you know, and I think it's Dan who's laid part of the blame at the Champions League and Premier League and the money, and you know, and he's absolutely right there. But for you, a more complicated question: what do you think the tournament can do? Or is it too far gone? You know, what can it do to redeem some of its magic? Or is it just too far gone now? Is it just something that, I'm not saying it's an afterthought, but certainly outside of the top six, top eight, I would probably think it's probably a third choice competition to win.
Yeah, it's just been neglected, really. The hyperbole that surrounds the Premier League and the Champions League, and how it is sold by the television companies and its sponsors as being the be-all and end-all. They have very defined and narrowed it down to being, even to the point that, you know, the UEFA Cup, as well as the Europa League, means little to a lot of people now, which is just such a massive shame, because of these, it's these storied tournaments that have fallen by the wayside as being almost like a second division tournament. It's, you know, we all used to not mock it, but have a disdain towards things like the ZDS Cup and you know, the Screen Sports Super Cup and all of these, you know, subsidiary tournaments that were completely unnecessary. And suddenly that's how people view kind of like the League Cup and the FA Cup and the Europa League. Everything, you know, greed is good in football now, and everything is just so focused on the Premier League and the Champions League that it has. It's just fallen away by the wayside. And I don't know, you can never make the FA Cup what it was. The only thing you can do is try and revive some of the elements that made it so great. You know, take the semi-finals back to neutral venues. You know, make Wembley the prize. You know, you shouldn't be getting to the quarterfinals and be one step away from Wembley. You know, that should not be the case. You know, if people aren't turning up at games, then, you know, reduce the ticket price. Why not have the £10 ticket? You know, fill the stadiums for cheaper prices. You know, I think one of the startling things this season was, I think it was Millwall playing in the quarterfinals, a home quarterfinal for Millwall in the FA Cup in an nearly empty stadium. You know, just so bizarre of a concept. You know, you can look down a lot of the records of teams and things like that, and you know the highest attendance at certain stadiums will still remain an FA Cup third or fourth round game from the 1940s, the 1950s, when everyone wanted to see this massive FA Cup game. And you know, you can't make the FA Cup what it was, but you can return some of its luster by just doing the simple things right.
It's funny you mention that, actually. Hull City's record attendance at Boothroyd Park was an FA Cup quarter final against Manchester United. And you're right, from the 50s. I'm going to, just to fill you in, Dan, it's Manchester City Watford, the FA Cup. And to be fair, I thought it was Wolves up until about 2 minutes before we started, and I double checked. So it is Manchester City Watford.
Well, that's the one thing. I can't remember the last time I sat and watched an FA Cup final.
Go on.
Bonkers. So I was at the 2012 final as a supporter, but you know, as far it might well be that Wigan Man City final might be the last one that I sat and watched.
And that's I mean, obviously, you know, there's four of us here tonight, and you know that our chat is probably being replicated across pubs and what have you, you know, all around the country, certainly with the lead up to the cup final, and yet we're all sort of sat here struggling to remember who's playing in 10 days' time in what used to be the biggest, sort of the biggest game in English football. However, I am going to ask you for a quick... Well, I'm going to ask you who you think will win, but I'm pretty sure I can guess or how you think that, you know, the final will play out, if you care and if you have an opinion. I'm still going to ask it anyway. With regards to, it's something we've touched on. I think, you know, as a last topic, I've been to Cardiff, not for an FA Cup final. Like, I've been to Cardiff. I've been to watch the Rugby League Challenge Cup final there, and I've been to watch a Charity Shield, and it's still my favourite stadium that I've ever been to. As a theatre for football, and I'm sure there's better ones around the world, but certainly in this country, you know, it's by far the best stadium, the best sports stadium I've ever been to, the Cardiff Stadium. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful venue. And I suppose, you know, Dan, as a Manchester United fan, you'll have been to Cardiff, well, certainly more times than I have. What's your opinions, and what sort of impact do you think that had on the tournament? Those Cardiff years, if you like.
I mean, I can only really speak from a personal point of view. I really enjoyed going to Cardiff. The stadium is a great stadium, to be fair, and it's right in the city centre, which is a huge plus for it. So, you know, you can be in the pubs and sort of spilling out onto the streets and then just walk to the stadium, as opposed to Wembley, which is kind of in the middle of nowhere, really, isn't it? So I think from a personal point of view, just from a purely logistic day out, I thought it was brilliant. And even that even goes for the League Cup final that Liverpool won 2-0. You know, regardless of the result, it was just it's a great day out.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the thing about Cardiff, is that, you know, you could lose a cup final and still have a really brilliant time there. You know, we'd go down and make a weekend of it. We'd always struggle to get a hotel room in Cardiff, but we'd stay, you know, as close as possible within an easy train journey. And it was just such a, you know, it is a beautiful city and a beautiful stadium. You know, train station just around the corner, pubs, beautiful pubs dotted everywhere. You know, so welcoming as well. You know, you can go to London, you can go to, this sounds like north versus south here, but, you know, the unfriendliness, the stereotypical unfriendliness of London, which is massively improved on the last time I went. But you went to Cardiff and you were just welcomed with open arms. They were just delighted that you were there and that this event was happening in their city, in their stadium. And it was brilliant. They were great, great events, and they were great, great fans. And that 2006 final against West Ham that went 3-3 and then to penalties, it, you know, they even threw it. And we had the drama of the 2001 final when, you know, we snatched it off Arsenal completely undeservedly in the last 7 minutes. You know, it offered, you know, some great games, you know, some great finals and just brilliant experiences. Shame it's not still there.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Right, I've had another thought. I'm going to ask you all for your standout single moment from FA Cup final history, if you like. So your single standout moment. I'll go first, because normally I go last, but I'm going to go first. However, before I ask that, like I say, this year's FA Cup final, you know, sort of a week on Saturday, Manchester City, Watford, Aidan, how do you see the final going?
I could only see it going one way, and I imagine we're probably all going to say something similar. I think Watford might at least give it a good go. I mean, why not? They've reached it now. They've got nothing else to go for. They're safe in the league, you know, all of this. I think they'll really give it a good go. Early on, they might test City a bit. I mean, City have obviously been through the ringer in recent weeks, but I think quality will out in the end.
I think I'm not going to give an opinion on this, but I agree with you. Dan, thoughts, if you care?
Okay, now that I know who's playing, I can give a thought.
Excellent.
I think it's pretty obvious that City are going to win, but also, I think, just to sort of throw a little sort of caveat in there, you know, it depends also on what happens on Sunday. I think if they go on and win the league, then, you know, maybe their sort of tails are up. If Sunday ends in kind of, you know, Liverpool winning the league, then maybe they go into the cup final, you know, like a wounded animal and want to come out and get something from the season. Or maybe they're, maybe they're just completely shot to bits. So I think I'll sort of sit on the fence a bit. I expect City to win, but I think, you know, what happens on Sunday might play a part.
Fair point. Stephen, thoughts?
Yeah, I'd probably agree with Dan there. I think the best you can get is that you hope for a good final, you hope for a close final, you hope that Watford won't, you know, defend too deeply as Brighton did in the semi-finals. I seem to remember Brighton didn't venture forward until the last 10 minutes. I know they went for containment. No, just go for it. A bit like, was it Hull got to the final and played half?
Yeah, two nil up in 10 minutes.
Yeah, 2-0 up in 10. That's what I want from Brighton. I want Brighton. What for? See, how bad's that? I've even got Brighton in the final. You know, I'd just like Watford to go for it in the same way to how Hull did. Go for it and get the first goal and let's make a final of it. But I doubt it. I think City will run away with it myself.
Okay, so before we go then, Phil, like I say, it's been a fantastic hour reminiscing. Any excuse to talk about, in my opinion, you know, the golden age of football in England in terms of memories from my childhood and obviously your guys' childhoods as well. But I'm going to ask you for your single standout moment. I'm going to go first. And bizarrely, after all this talk about FA Cup finals from my childhood, it's actually a relatively modern moment. And Stephen's just talked about it there with the Liverpool-West Ham game. And it's that third goal by Steven Gerrard in that Cardiff final. The almost the exhaustion that the players were at, that he must have been at, the desperation. But it was just the most perfect strike, the most perfect goal, in the most perfect of circumstance and moments. And it was everything. It was all, I think the reason why I love it so much is because it was a glimpse of what I used to love watching as a kid, as a child. And it almost, well, it did take me back to those epic cup finals of the sort of late 70s and right the way through the 80s. And I think I look at it as almost like the last glimpse of, for me, of a magic moment in an FA Cup final, a 3-3 thriller, it, the lead changing hands, it had everything that I wanted from an FA Cup final. And I think that third goal by Steven Gerrard just sums up for me what the FA Cup final was all about for the last time. So if you're going to pick it, Stephen, I apologise, but that's why I went first.
No, I could listen to you talk about that final. I can still picture where I was in the stadium. You know, up in the top tier, right on the bend of where the corner flag was at that end, and seeing that ball come down and just connecting with it and it flying in. And as he hit it, you know, the stadium announcers just coming out with, you know, how many minutes stoppage time is about to be. You know, we're kind of like kicking our feet a bit, thinking, Christ, we've blown this. And then he just blasted that in the back of the net, and yeah, I can just remember all hell breaking loose around us, and another one of those surreal days. But yeah, incredible.
You can have another go in a sec. Don't worry, you don't have to share mine. Dan, for you, standout FA Cup final moment.
Well, can I be really cheeky and have two?
There's always one. Yeah, you can. Yeah.
Because football fans like winding each other up, I'm going to have just a couple of jokes at the expenses of my fellow guests. So I'll go for the first one being the 96 final, when Liverpool rocked up in those horrendous white suits.
Oh, they were awful.
And then Cantona scored that late goal. And one of the things I love about that goal as well is it was the last FA Cup final goal scored in the nets, you know, with like the green piping coming off the posts. And I know this sounds really ridiculous, but talking earlier about kind of things that kill the FA Cup, the following year when Di Matteo scored after, was it less than a minute, the nets had changed, so the nets had gone to those sort of, you know, the standard square nets that we see now.
But one
of the things I always loved about Wembley was those old nets with the sort of curved green.
Every ground that you could identify a stadium by the goalposts, like West Ham, very, very, you know, enigmatic, narrow goalposts. I think we spoke about this a couple of weeks ago with Dan.
We did, yeah.
And yeah, all right, you know, he's spot on about those old Wembley goalposts, yeah.
Absolutely. And then the other one is, I'll go for the 99 final, when the players were going up to collect the trophy and Alan Shearer was stood there glumly clapping, you know, through gritted teeth, you know, picking up his loser's medal. That was quite a satisfying moment. Sorry, Aidan.
Well, fair enough. I'm quite interested to hear what you respond with there, Aidan, for your, because I'm pretty sure it won't be Alan Shearer glumly clapping. Your favourite FA Cup final moment?
Well, no, it won't be anything Newcastle related, sadly. And I've already talked about Keith Houchen, so I'll not pick that either. So, at the risk of stealing another answer from Stephen. Another standout final for me from the 80s was the Liverpool-Everton that Stephen mentioned earlier, the first one in 86. The standout moments I recall is, obviously it was 2-1 going into the latter 5-10 minutes or so, and Ian Rush scoring Liverpool's third. And you talk about the goalpost there, and that's what kind of has brought it really back to mind, or the nets, sorry, is that his shot hit the very back of the back corner of the net and knocked over one of the cameras. And for some reason, I just remember that so well. He perfectly hit the camera, and somebody will have got a great photo of that, hopefully. But that was a standout, and obviously it was a game that was quite in the balance at that time. I think Liverpool were always slightly more dominant throughout, but, you know, it was still a close score going at those last few minutes, and then Ian Rush, of course, getting the third goal. But the way it hit the net, or didn't quite hit the net there, and smashed into the camera, was very iconic and quite a way to win that very significant cup final.
Brilliant.
They did. I think either on grandstand for the kind of like the opening credits, they used that footage for ages and ages and ages. And that camera spinning away as it got it by the ball, yeah.
So just yours left, Stephen. We've sort of cherry picked your Liverpool moments, but that's all right. I'm sure you've got more.
That was it. When Dan mentioned the goalpost, that moment that Aidan actually spoke of sprang immediately to my mind as well. And I thought, I'll mention that one, but I'll pick another one. I'll pick another one from...
You've got a few to pick from, yeah. The rest of us don't have so many.
That's right.
Another one somewhere, yeah. Another one from that final would be, there was a save that Bruce Grablar made at 1-1. Alan Hansen played this uncharacteristically, loose ball across the penalty area. He was under pressure and he just played it across the edge of the 18-yard line at height. And Graham Sharp, I think it was, got on the end of it. And it looped up and it was coming down. And it was one of those that would have dropped under the crossbar and into the net. And Grobbelaar had to backpedal from around about the penalty spot to kind of like just get back and acrobatically leap and tip it over the crossbar. And it was one of those sliding doors moments that at 1-1, if Everton went 2-1 up, you know, where that game might have gone. And I think we were, you know, I think we were 2-1 up within a couple of minutes of that happening. And it was just that schism of the game where it deflected from going one way to the other.
Brilliant. Well, fellas, unfortunately, like I say, we could talk about this all night. We could have multiple podcasts, I think, on the FA Cup, on its highlights and lowlights, to be fair, as well. But unfortunately, time's against us. Dan, thank you very much, as always, for coming on, for your contributions. Brilliant, as always.
Cheers, Stu. Yeah, really enjoyed it.
Brilliant. Aidan, great to have you back on, you know, so soon after your My Side performance. Once again, it's great, no offence, it's great to have a fellow supporter of a not quite so good a football team than listening to the Man United, Arsenal and Chelsea fans, that Liverpool fans that I normally have to chat with. It's, I feel like I need you on more.
Well, absolutely, we've got to bring a bit of balance to it, you know, not everyone can be these mega successful supporting teams, you know. Some of us have to live through the dross, don't we?
But that's right.
It's been great fun.
Brilliant. Stephen, as always, first of all, congratulations on last night. More magical memories for you. I'm really happy for you. But also, you know, again, thanks for joining us and sharing, you know, in what is a great competition that unfortunately has, for me, has just not been looked after.
Yeah, it's like a, you know, it's like a seaside town closed down for winter, isn't it? Now the FA Cup, that's, you know, a shame, but it's been great talking about some of the great parts of what it has delivered.
Brilliant. All that's left for me is to say thank you to the listeners, and please join us again on the Lob podcast with These Football Times. Thank you and goodbye.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.